Welcome back, folks. We're hot off the press from the DLC annual stakeholders meeting in St. Louis at the lovely and exciting Ritz-Carlton Hotel. We have for you today the one, the only, the powerful, the brilliant Tina Halfpenny. It was lovely to have her on, Greg, no?
Well, always. She's the executive director of the DLC, which, as we all know, is a very powerful organization in lighting. And I had a great discussion with her on where they're at, what they're looking at doing, and what's in the future.
She's so humble, but we know, Tina, that deep inside, you're taking over the lighting industry, right? $1 million. This episode of the show is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, Greg.
Yeah, check out today. We have their Future Fit LED kits. You'll see it on the YouTube video. These are little kits that can fit into legacy fixtures. So sometimes you have a light fixture that's decorative enough or looks sharp and you don't want to change it. Mm-hmm. We know there are a lot of options that you can change, but you want to keep the fixture. You want to keep the look, but you want to retrofit it. And maybe it's not a screw-in bulb. Maybe it's a plug-in compact fluorescent or something that you can't have an easy retrofit for. Mm-hmm. Yep. They have these kits that they come in like a circle shape or a half moon or a rectangle that have everything built into it, and they snap right into the fixture. They maintain the integrity and the look of that fixture, but make it LED, which saves you energy, lasts longer, and does everything that you know is good with LED.
Didn't someone call them the retrofit kings?
Someone on the show did, and it wasn't the co-host. So,
go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KEYSTONETECH.com for our friends over at Keystone. A great arrow to have in your quiver if you're a distributor is Keystone, that's for sure. And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, Greg. Go there.
I will.
But for right now, we got the brilliant and powerful and lovely Tina Halfpenny on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Welcome back, Tina Halfpenny.
Thank you, Mike and Greg.
Thanks for being here. So I don't know if you remember, but the last time, I think it was 2 years ago, we spoke. Can you believe that?
Two years ago. Yeah.
It seems like forever.
Feels quick. Really?
Yeah, but I started off the podcast. I started off the podcast by saying, what does it feel like to be the most powerful woman in the lighting business?
Oh, right. I remember that.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. I think there's a new question. What does it feel like to be maybe the most powerful person in the lighting business today?
Yeah, well, gosh, I wish I could remember what I said last time. We are definitely not the most powerful organization. I am not the most powerful person in the lighting
industry.
I don't know,
man. What do you think, Greg? I'm not sure either. I think there's a lot of different people involved, obviously. I don't know that there's one.
I think the DLC is the most powerful organization in the lighting business right now. I do.
Does there need to be a powerful organization in the lighting industry?
That's a real feminine response. I'm not going to say female, but that's a feminine way to look at it. Mm. I think that we're looking at power dynamics when we're looking at these things. And I think the DLC is something that maybe is more impactful than the DLC is aware of. I think that the downstream, you know, for example, in my organization, my manager came to me and he's like, well, we want to put some logos on our proposal. And the logo we wanted to put on the proposal was the DLC's logo. That's it. Right? So what he's saying is that customers at the end of the end game, they know about you too now. And that wasn't the case 2 years ago. So we have customers that are asking us, is this product's DLC qualified or DLC mm-hmm. certified at the end of the chain, not manufacturers, but people that are not in lighting that are buying lighting. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. They're not asking for the IES.
Well, that's a totally different role, right?
I'm not sure it is. Mm. I know you see it as a different role. I know that we were just interviewing Alex Baker. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, you know, the differences in what we do, and we cooperate, we work together as an industry and all sort of stuff. But I think that the emergent reality is that the end user consumer sees the DLC as the definer of quality product in this business. Mm. Isn't that what you wanted?
Well, we certainly wanted to enable, I'll say, access to quality products. You know, and we still want to do that. The adoption of commercial lighting still has a long way to go as it relates to solid state lighting. Mm-hmm. Even more when it comes to controls. Mm-hmm. And we want to see that happen. We want to see that happen in an accelerated way. But this conference for the next 2 days, 3 days, is all about how do we do that in the most comprehensive way we can. So the quality really is, you know, a holistic perspective, that the products really are producing quality of light, they're generating energy savings, that there is some, there's some trust in what that product is. Something that we see that's really interesting with the influence of the efficiency programs is that the end user, if you will, the entities who are buying lighting are different than they used to be.
The entities that are, you mean the end users who are buying lighting?
No.
No. Who do you mean entities? I'll describe that to you.
The ESCOs, the energy companies, sure. The implementers, they play a huge role in purchasing lighting now.
Sure.
They don't necessarily have lighting backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for references, and the DLC is the best known reference on quality in that and quality and efficacy.
And did it started as efficacy. Mm-hmm. And now it's moving into the quality side.
Well, it's sort of defaulting, right?
Yeah.
I think where we started out with efficacy, and we did bring in a lot of other metrics to try to have a more rounded approach to what was qualified for the DLC QPL. You know, we definitely hear feedback that that the DLC is now the default accreditation for quality.
I would say for sure it is. Yeah, for sure. Have you guys bit off more than you can chew with the controls and health effects and all this stuff? Like I was on your 5.0 call. Is that what it was we were on a couple weeks ago?
Probably. Draft proposal.
Yeah, the draft proposal. And you were talking about the, you know, making qualified products list for lights that help with human health outcomes. Mm. That's very, very ambitious.
Tricky.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. So the question, have we bit off more than we can chew?
Yeah.
I think that we are, you know, we're setting the table right now. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things going on in the lighting industry, not just around product development, although the technology is changing fast. Lighting is becoming more of a solution for a myriad of things, health being one, horticulture being another, you know, and then there's still the energy savings piece. The utilities, our member utilities have program budgets that are almost $1.9 billion annual program budgets. They're a huge influence in the market.
You're talking of incentives to give away $1.9 mm-hmm. billion.
Oh, the program budgets.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so this is all the work that they're putting in administration, marketing, incentives, implementers.
Well, Jim Benyon, you had a talk with him yesterday. He's an interesting guy in the lighting business.
Yeah.
So he was
a wealth of knowledge, isn't he?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, for sure. And fun to be with too, actually. Not only that, I like people that are knowledgeable and interesting and fun to be with.
Yeah, he's freewheeling in a way that you don't get a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good way to put it. He's a bit of a freewheeler. Free him and I are soul spirits or something. Yeah. But, you know, he was saying that the utilities are incented to have incentives in a way. And he said that, but now in his career, what he's seen is utilities be leaders in employing lighting knowledge and expanding lighting knowledge into now where they're not in that role anymore, and they look to an organization like you guys for guidance. that's a heavy burden to go with, because you're kind of standing in between the lighting industry and the utilities have all the money and all the growth. You're kind of like in between, you know, the people that make lights and the people that are incenting the purchase of lights in a way. So I think there's some resentment towards you guys there.
Well, probably.
You're like a gatekeeper to the money.
Well, zero guarantees on that money without a DLC qualification, right?
Yeah.
You know, with a market that has, we've got 1,800 plus manufacturers represented on our list, private labelers, you know, sort of starting up every day. It's really hard if you're not, you know, educated in lighting, how you navigate that market.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate the products? How do you navigate the players? People are new. They're offering warranties longer than they've been in business.
So we advocate a maximum 5-year warranty on this show. We've been pushing for that. When we interview people, we say no more than 5 years. After that, it's ridiculous. But I remember the last time we spoke, you talked about some issues that you were having in terms of fraudulent DLC certifications or something. What was, remember that, Greg?
Yeah, it was something like that. Like
people
it.
Were putting a DLC on their boxes and they weren't DLC. Yeah,
sure. Still happens.
How do you guys deal with that?
Well, if they have products that are listed and they're misrepresenting other products, we delist them.
All of their products and the company as well.
Yep. If they are misrepresenting as being DLC qualified and they are not one of our manufacturers, there's not a whole lot we can do. We send letters from our lawyer saying you need to cease and desist letters.
What if they're outside the United States? You have nothing you can do.
There's not a lot we can do.
Has there ever been any thought, and I mentioned it today in our meeting, but having defining what a legitimate lighting company is, you know, that you should be comfortable buying from them versus private labels and things that, because right now how the DLC is listed is you can make a product, anybody can make a product. Michael and I could start a company tomorrow, fly to China, have them make it for us, and we could bring it here, and it's DLC listed if we pay the fee.
If you get it tested.
If you get it tested, right. So have you guys ever thought about, let's limit the number of companies we'll actually allow to do this for? You know, I don't know how you filter that. I know that's a big animal, a big thing to tackle. But if you could do that, I think that might go a long ways to solving some of the resentment in the industry, in my opinion. Do you feel that way?
I don't think the DLC should be able to do that, no. I think that's a really bad idea. Because I don't think anyone should be able to say who can and who can't start a business. And who can and who can't participate in a market. I don't even think the government should be allowed to do that. Like the U.S. government, the California government, sure. In a sense. You know, if we want to put up $2 million and put the research and development and set up an office and do our thing, there shouldn't be someone that says no to that. You know, maybe, you know, you set up a registration of companies. And what I think what Greg's talking about is, how do you know the difference between somebody that's private, like that's a slapdash private labeler and a legitimate company? There's no way to know. And your logo's on both.
Well, I'm not sure if we need to know.
You guys.
Yeah. The way that we're set up now, the product's been sent in for testing, the lab tests are submitted to us. Mm-hmm. We verify that they're performing to meet the specs, mm-hmm. and they get qualified.
And that's it.
That's what we do now. You know, there is a lot of conversation going on, and I think it's sort of fascinating because the lighting industry, the manufacturers, there's so much change and churn happening. You know, it's kind of like everybody's trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up, when they've been a 100-year-old industry.
Sure.
And now all of a sudden everything's changing. And there is a lot of conversation around, you know, how can you offer a lifetime warranty when you've been in business for 9 months? Is that something that the DLC should care about?
Is that something you could care? I mean, can you put that as a qualification saying you must have a warranty of no longer than this? Or, you know, in Michael's point, we want a 5-year warranty, no longer than that. Could you state something like that?
Well, we do have warranty requirements in the, yeah. But what I'm hearing is, you know, just because there's a warranty offered on a product doesn't mean that the company is going to be there to honor it. And, you know,
we call that the promises, promises. You understand what I mean? Yep. Promises, promises. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sure. These lights are going to last forever, Tina. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, all you got to do is when I'm out of business, give me a call.
Yep.
And I won't take care of anything. Yeah. I mean, it's the promises, promises. But I think the health effects of lighting is the promises, promises too.
Yep. I mean, the other thing that's happening with lighting now is there is more capabilities coming out of these lights than we've ever seen before.
I'm talking about like digital addressable, this kind of thing.
As well as health benefits, as well as, you know,
the ability to potentially have the internet out of it, you know, things like that.
Wi-Fi,
yeah. but also, you know, plant growth. This one will grow your crops so much faster than, you know, another type. There's a lot of claims. We, you know, no organization is really fit to be able to dispel all of the claims that, you know, can be made on the capabilities of lighting right now. But it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, for sure. But aren't you guys planning to add health effects to the quality products list?
Well, it's a consideration, particularly when it comes to...
I think you should consider it very, very deeply.
Do you?
Yeah, before you do it.
Mm. Oh, yeah, before we do it, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you should consider, spend a lot of time in the consideration process, actually.
Well, there's these things at play right now. I mean, health is one. Who's to say that this light affects someone better than another person? Another sort of claim is, you know, productivity of the workforce. That's something that makes me very concerned, too.
Or makes me cringe.
Schools.
I can hear that cringe. It's like,
use that color temperature on the kids during their standardized testing, and you're going to get better scores. Right. You know, I think, oh, what are we trying to do
here?
Yeah,
come on. In my whole life, I've been told that sunlight is bad for me, that I'm to put on sunscreen whenever I go outside, and I should wear sunglasses because of the glare. It's going to hurt my eyes. And now we have people in the lighting business that are saying that we need to bring the sunlight indoors. So does this mean that I now need to wear sunscreen inside and sunglasses inside? Or maybe do we have the whole thing wrong? Mm. Maybe it's good to take a nice 2-hour walk in the sunshine. Maybe that's good for you.
Yeah, it's definitely good for you.
But why have I been told my whole life that I should wear sunglasses all the time? You know, it seems like that there's some conflicting messaging from the medical community or maybe the marketing community, or maybe it's sunglasses company. But somehow the vast majority, especially people that are of very fair skin, they're told that the sun is bad for them. And I'm sure that in certain instances that people, you know, get sunburned or whatever. But if this type of light, does it help us or hurt us?
Science is out, right? I mean, I actually love to hear the scientists debate this.
Sure.
Because there is no consensus right now. I would say daylight is good for you.
I would say that it's very difficult for you to for someone to convince me that sunlight is bad for people. I would have a very, you'd have to, like, it would be almost impossible to convince me of that. But you know, many people in our society have been convinced of that. That they go outside with sun, they will not go outside in a sunny day without sunglasses on or sunscreen. And I'm not sure that now we're talking about it as an industry wanting to bring that indoors. Well, there's something that needs to be sorted out there first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do know that lighting can really improve the indoor experience, though, right?
You mean natural light, bringing natural light.
Natural light, yes, but also artificial light.
Okay.
Artificial light can really improve, you know, the indoor environment. It can make the colors pop. It can make you feel more alert. Just, you know, generally feel more sort of relaxed. I mean, depending on how the light is tuned.
But do you know what light that is that does that? That's the problem. We don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure, and you know, humans are unique,
complicated creatures,
complicated, tricky. Yes.
The other thing is people have their own opinions of what kind of light they like, and they don't care what the DLC says or anybody else, right? So there's a rule in people. I install lighting systems every day. So does Greg, right? So you're at one end of the business, and we're at the all. Tina's at this end, and Michael and Greg are all the way at the other end of the business. But I know that one of the things that the best color temperature for the customer is the one that they want.
Yeah. Right? Well, you know, it's funny. So I was just talking to Randy about the new LaGuardia Airport renovation.
Okay.
So they've all new lights. And Randy said, did you see the lighting in there? It was beautiful. I didn't even want to go outside. Well, it's LaGuardia, so there's nothing interesting outside anyway. Mm-hmm. But what's really funny about that is I've been to the new one. And I've told the DLC team this many, many times. The ladies' room in that terminal has black tile, chrome fixtures, and they have these LED strips all around with the lenses pulled off. So these little glaring diodes hitting black glass tile and chrome fixtures, and it is a horror show.
Yeah, it sounds like a little bit of a horror show, actually.
Yeah, it is. So that's what I remembered about the
LaGuardia Airport.
Yep.
So as you think about this, and I'm involved in a committee that I'm on with the DLC, but this is, I think, for the public to understand a little bit more about the decision-making process and what you guys actually do when you decide here's what our new requirements are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys go about that?
Oh, this is something that I think the DLC does very well, and we have been investing a tremendous amount of thought into how to do this as inclusively as possible. Mm-hmm. So the 5.0 spec in particular, it's big, it's burly, it's complicated, and it's also multidimensional in terms of what we're trying to do. It's far more than an efficacy increase. So, you know, we went out with surveys. We sent over 4,000 Survey Monkeys out. I think we got over 400 of them back. I can't remember how many, you know, sort of different types of organizations responded back. So that helped to inform the technical development of the policies. Then the draft specifications went out. We received over 1,000 comments on those policies. And that was just 2 weeks ago. So the team has been spending the last 2 weeks going through all of those comments, trying to categorize them, trying to figure out, you know, how many of them are sort of complete outliers, how many of them present risk, how many of them present opportunity, supportive, negative. And all of that is what is informing the discussion sessions that we're having in the stakeholder meeting tomorrow and Wednesday. So we've got discussion sessions on cybersecurity, glare, flicker, efficacy, color and spectral quality. There's another one. I think energy monitoring is the other one. Mm. And, you know, what we're trying to do is hear from everybody. What, you know, this is what we have. You know, do you agree? Do you disagree? Is this something that we should?
Well, how do you weigh that? I mean, if a scientist at the, you know, at Groningen University in their lighting lab emails you, that's another level of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, if Greg and Michael fill out a survey. So you have a board of directors that, or what is it,
the industry advisory committee.
And then do you have a scientific advisory committee?
We have a technical committee, and they are utilities.
Hmm. I think you need some scientists if you're going to go into this health effects thing.
We do, yeah.
You have some scientists
on
staff?
We have a scientist on staff, Uta Biesenecker.
Okay.
Uta is a scientist.
I heard her on the last 5.0 she spoke.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, so Uta's taking color. She's taking health and well-being. We've also asked PNNL to help us with technical support on glare and flicker.
Who's so PNN and PNNL?
Pacific Northwest National Labs.
Okay.
Yep. And then we have some consultants. They are also helping us with the research.
Hmm. So you guys take a variety of opinions into account? It's not like a decision that's taken, made lightly.
I think we've got the science, we've got the opinions, you know, and what this meeting is about is perspective. So are we weighing the comments, you know, by stakeholder group? Not really. Hmm. You know, there are definitely some comments that we heard a lot of, and those are the ones that we're really trying to sort through while we're here. Mm-hmm. At the end of each day, we're going to have these report out sessions. So in the individual discussion sessions, we'll be, you know, trying to sort of streamline things. We'll bring it to the overall group at the end of the day. We'll have more discussion. If there's, you know, hindsight thoughts or, you know, other questions that come up, people can slap sticky notes on our table out in the exhibit hall. We will take those back with us. All of this will inform our draft two.
So you'll listen to everybody. You'll weigh the opinions. Who makes the final decision on what direction you go?
Well, the next one is another draft.
Okay. Yep. Of the 5.0.
Yep.
And you're going to send that back out.
Yep.
But who decides when you're going to move forward? Is it you? Like you decide, like, enough industry consultation, enough, we're going to do this. Who decides that?
Well,
someone's got to be in charge of this thing.
Yeah. So the team does that. But, you know, some of the most important factors is the potential impact, is it valid enough mm-hmm. to warrant moving through? Is it something that we can implement in a timely manner? You know, what are the unintended consequences? Let's brainstorm all of that before we move forward. How many aspects of this, you know, can be separated? How much of this can be disaggregated?
What are some of the unintended consequences that happened with your past programs that you wish didn't?
You know, I don't know if I can answer that, but I would say where we are now with 5.0 is more of a course correction. So we recognize that the DLC has become the default for quality. Mm-hmm. If we're going to keep pursuing efficacy increases, we need to make sure that they are coupled with additional metrics.
Hmm. So what do you guys see as your biggest challenge as you go forward?
Related to...
Just what you're doing, your mission, what you've got in mind for the future.
Oh, there's a few. You know, one is we are extremely considerate of the testing requirements that need to happen looking at 5.0 in its entirety.
But, you know, efficacy, so you're testing. Efficacy is pretty easy to measure.
Mm-hmm.
Lumens per watt, whatever measurement mm-hmm. you want to use, right?
Yep.
How are you going to measure connected? And we're going to go through each one. How are you going to measure that? Like, how is that going to help anybody? Who cares if it's connected or not?
Are we going to measure it? Or are we
like, how are you going to? So you're going to go to utilities and say, here's quality connected lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What does connected lighting have to do to be useful and generate savings? Or what's the point of it?
Well, I guess I don't know how you're thinking of
like why would utilities, because utilities are your clients,
mm-hmm.
right? We're stakeholders and vendors and this kind of stuff, but the people that pay, that you're serving are utilities, right? Mm-hmm. Why, utilities are about energy efficiency, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would utilities need the DLC to be qualifying connected lighting?
Mm. Well, the opportunity for energy savings with connected lighting is just amplified.
I'm not so sure about that.
Ooh, we are.
Well, the opportunity is there, but what Mike's trying to find out is how you can actually measure that it's doing what it was intended to do.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I mean, connected lighting also increases complexity.
Yes, you mean in terms of trying to weigh the trade-offs?
The trade-offs, the management of the system as well. I mean, yeah. You know, your light's either on or off, and with the photocell, you know, first, that's the first thing we put on it. Now you're going to address these lights and you're going to do something with them. What is it that you're going to do with them? Turn them off when no one's there?
Dim
turn them
when
down?
Somebody
dim
is
them?
There.
Dim them down. And what is it? We know what it is that you want to have done with it. What is it that the utilities want to do?
What do the utilities want to
do? What is it that they imagine is going to happen? I think largely, whenever the controls is always very marginal on energy savings on lighting projects, wouldn't you say?
I would say so.
Marginal. Yeah, yeah. Even great controls.
Because it's all speculative. You don't know. You can never honestly say, I know this space is now going to be used this many hours versus what it was used. So
yeah.
That's the kind of thing you'll never be able to measure. So.
And you don't know when the controls are not going to work properly and they're going to turn the lights on when nobody's there.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, we just heard this morning about I can't remember if it was in our meeting, about some network controls that went in and they didn't work. They weren't, you know, they actually weren't even activating because they left the switches on the wall.
Yeah. There's other problems too. There's problems of with controls where the controls are like controls is not about the product. It's about the installation and the commissioning.
Yeah. But you know, if lighting isn't controlled, if lighting isn't able to become integrated with the ecosystem in the building, it's going to get left behind. It's going to be a commodity. It's going to be a one-off standalone product. It's got to evolve. I mean, the smart building is something. We're not, you know,
sure. We're
not seeing smart buildings coming up as fast as everyone talked about, you know, sort of the IoT revolution, but it is the future. And lighting can be a part of it, or lighting can, you know, stand on its own. There'll be another software provider to come in and network the lighting if the lighting industry doesn't do it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure anyone would network the lighting for the energy savings. I think they would network it for data that they would get from the lights, and that the value would be in the data, not in the energy savings. Like, if you're able to really gather data from networked lighting systems, like, because remember, lighting is everywhere. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. Artificial lighting is in every room of the built environment, basically. Mm-hmm. And if the value, it's like, it's kind of does what a Google does. Like, so you're not, the user of Google is not Google's customer, it's Google's product.
Yeah, so maybe you're not getting, you know, significant energy savings when you go into the auditorium, but when you do the entire building and you do, you know, that whole city block of buildings, you aggregate those savings, they can be massive.
As long as they're being used. So I think what the key is for DLC, your job is to make sure the control is capable of doing X amount of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it actually gets installed is the other issue that this industry is going to have. But there's nobody necessarily policing and making sure of that. I've seen in our end.
See, the value of controls is not in the product. It's in the commissioning.
Yes.
And the installation.
Well, if the utilities are supporting it with incentives, they're going to go back in and check to see how those are performing in terms of the energy savings.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that how do you certify the commissioning? Is that what you guys are going to do? Is there going to be DLC certified installers or commissioners or something like that?
No.
Just the products.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other thing to do. Somebody needs to now certify the installation.
Yeah, I mean, that's an opening there. Yeah,
for sure.
Health effects. Same question. Start over.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Health effects.
So why would the utilities want to incent healthy lighting over energy efficient lighting?
Well, that question, I don't really know. Things that utilities want, the energy savings, right? We all know that. The other thing that utilities want is customer satisfaction.
Yeah, but their customers, the lighting people experiencing the light and being the customers of the light, or not the utilities customers.
No, but it might be, you know, it might be an engineering firm saying, you know, we're doing this lighting design in, you know, in a high profile project. We're trying to get rebates.
If someone,
it happens to be a human centric, you know, lighting focus.
Not allowed to use that word anymore.
Not allowed to use that
human
word.
Human centric's out. We've decided.
Living organism.
Yeah, it's got to be like all living centric, because lots of things need light. Like coastal areas, there's health effects, but maybe not for humans. Like wildlife, health effects do matter.
Biosphere centric.
Biosphere centric. Wow, boom.
Term,
there we go. We're figuring it out here on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Yeah, terminology matters though, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
It matters. You know, when you hear words like saccadic percepts, or what is it? Or, you know, what are those, temporal light modulation? Mm. Like when you hear those terms and someone says, yes, what temporal light modulation means light oscillation that's unhealthy for humans. It's from artificial light. Now you know that somebody knows something about that, actually, and maybe they have some information you need to listen to. So jargon matters in a sense, or naming stuff matters. So why would the utilities want to wade into that uncertainty?
I'm not sure they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But why do you then?
We are waiting. We're waiting. Yep, we are waiting into it.
Oh, that's so scary.
Yeah. But you know what? The claims that are being made in that world are scary too.
Well, degenerate peddler would make those claims. A degenerate peddler would make claims like that.
Yeah. Well, there is not a definition on circadian lighting that has any kind of industry consensus yet. So there's a long way to go.
Yeah. And but you're going to lead that way.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. No.
Well, if you come up with a quality products list that has health effects that listed on them, that will be when it starts. The day that people start saying this is healthy is the day that you say it is.
No.
I think so, Greggy. What do you think?
Time will tell, I guess. I don't know that.
If there's a DLC label that comes out that goes on a fixture and it says healthy or something like that on it.
DLC healthy.
That's when it will start to really fly.
Healthy.
Yes.
Oh geez.
Certified.
Yeah. No, I do not predict that happening anytime soon.
No.
No.
So you guys are wading in, but wading slowly.
We're wading in, and we're looking for the thought leaders and the science to come up with the standards.
So Dr. Figueroa,
really want that
she's speaking here.
She is. Yeah.
Yeah. And has she spoken yet?
Tomorrow.
That's
is it
where,
tomorrow? Maybe it's Wednesday.
That's where it's seeing, actually. We've talked to Dr. Jennifer Veach as well.
Okay.
And Dr. Arnold Wilkins. We have a couple doctors who have been on the show. We're very interested in people. I like it when someone's name says PhD after. It's because mine doesn't.
Well, you should talk to Uta.
We'd love to have her on.
Yuta's our resident PhD. She's leading the color.
I love that. Because, you know, it's funny because I actually read quite a few books myself. I'm not going to. But, you know, you'll see somebody will be making this person said this and this person said that. And then sometimes when you see a book written by a true scientist, he'll always mention the person's qualifications after they say their name. You know, this person, PhD, you know, University of Wisconsin, here's what they wrote or whatever. So it's important that those people agree here. And they're not even close to agreeing on anything.
Not yet.
Okay.
But they know how important it is.
Yeah.
And you guys are getting into it just to be ready. Be preparing for it.
We're waiting in it.
Waiting in. That's going to be the name of this show. Wading into the health effects of lighting. That's the name of this show. Because we could just put Tina Halfpenny on it and it would be pretty popular. I bet you about 10,000 people are going to listen to this.
That's a lot of people.
Yep. We get on an average episode, we get about 5,000.
Wow.
So for someone like of your stature, it might be 10,000. 10,000.
Well, I would recommend chatting with Uta too, because she certainly knows a lot more about health and wellness.
That would certainly be our pleasure to do that, I would say. Yeah,
she's our thought leader.
Yeah, I think to kind of close it out, is there anything else from the DLC standpoint, where we're going, what the plan is, that you want to state?
Well, what do you guys think? What are the big challenges facing the industry?
Ooh, she puts it back at you. You go first.
Oh, my turn?
You go first.
Big challenges. So I talked to Mike a lot about it, and is from us, our standpoint, selling it to the end users, is we have competition that can import a lot of this stuff. So to me, I want to know that I'm selling quality product. I think I can filter it out, but I think a lot of people can't. And so I like the idea of stamping quality. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I like that idea because I want to be comfortable, as the utility company does, as the end user does. They want to know that what they're getting is right. And there's a lot of people out there that are selling that's not right.
Yeah.
So I think manufacturers are on board with that. A lot of them that are here. And I think the leading distributors are too. People that are ESCOs or people that are actually implementing the system.
I think the number one challenge is for the business is, and this might be, I think we'll all agree. I think I'm going to be right about this. Okay. I think the number one challenge for this business is the vacuum of leadership left by the basically absence of Sylvania, Phillips, and GE. I think that's a big problem. Like, they're kind of all backing away. So Signify now, Led Vance, GE Lighting was sold to MLS. And, you know, not having that large corporate leadership dynamic in competition with one another too. Like, there, not only are there, there's something about those three companies, which is there's a set, there's sections of them that are not on anybody's side, but are looking at the industry. Like Phillips is really pioneering the Jaga, the Jaga Consortium, right? They were on the side as part of their strategy. They were funding Jaga and really trying to push the form factor, you know, trying to make form factors universal. Like, that's something good for the business, quite frankly. I think their absence is the largest challenge we face right now.
Interesting.
Because they bring a different kind of leadership to the table, a type of leadership that you cannot provide, that the IES cannot provide. They have a different perspective that is unique and valuable. And the way they research things is they're researching it from a different perspective, not from an academic perspective, but from a ability to make money with good quality lighting perspective.
Potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we're missing that in this business big time.
Yeah. The I'm not sure how to characterize it. The aggressive price competition that's happening out there is a concern for me. And how it affects the quality of the products.
Well, I think there's I mean, how dare you, first of all, tell people what to charge? I'm joking, by the way. No, but I mean, I think that there's a reduction in price of the product and increase in quality at the same time, because that's what we've seen. We've seen an increase in quality and a reduction in pricing. So the LED tubes that you buy now are way better than the ones that were 5 years ago.
Okay.
Like, it's not even a comparison. They're way better. All the technology is better, but specifically, you know, it's way better and it's cheaper. What's that thing they use with the microchips? That's Murphy's Law. What's the other law?
Yeah.
You know, the chip speeds up by double and goes down in price every year and a half. It's Moore's Law. Law. Right? So lighting has been subject to Moore's Law right now, which always combines itself with vast industry growth at the same time. So when computers had Moore's Law going for them, the growth of that industry was like this. And it still is like that in a sense, because you consider these are all babies and grandchildren of computers, really, right? They're really just computers. So the growth in that industry is huge. Lighting is seeing the same kind of growth, but we don't have good leadership. We don't have big corporate leadership that we need. I think we need it. I'm going to keep going back to it again because I think it's really a problem. And there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the leadership in the computer world is not the people who made computers.
Who is it?
Google?
Oh, for sure, yes. These guys are commodity guys now. Well, it's interesting. The people that make light bulbs are not the leaders either. That's a commodity. Final assembly is a commodity thing too. That's why it's all over in China. Because it doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm.
More questions to be answered. What, a year from now, Tina?
Yeah. I see you in another year or whatever.
Wow, I sure wish everybody had a crystal ball. Right.
Can you believe we've spoken for almost an hour?
Wow. Well, thanks, you guys.
No, thank you.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, Tina.
Keystone Technologies. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com. Baby, KeystoneTech.com. The retrofit kings, Greg.
You check out their Future Fit LED kits. We talked about them at the beginning. Different shapes that can fit into existing fixtures. Keep that nice look of the fixture, but make it LED. Calculated life expectancy, the L70 is 93,000 hours, man. That's listed right on there, 93,000. Most LED stuff you see, 50,000. When you're doing a screw and bulb or something in a fixture like this,
25,000
hours.
Sure.
93,000. And I have done a lot of these personally, I can attest to. I don't get defectives from them. They've lasted a long time. I've done a lot of wall sconces and things in multi-housing with this kit. Works great.
So go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KEYSTONETECH.com, Greg. And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. Go there. Trust us.
Do it.
Do it. And, of course, Tina Halfpenny, the great, the powerful, the brilliant Tina Halfpenny. Thank you for coming on the show. You always win, Tina. I go in there thinking, I'm going to get that Tina Halfpenny. I'm going to pin her down. I'm going to make her admit something. And she always beats me, Greg. She's my nemesis.
No, she knows what she's talking about.
Yes. She's
doing the right thing.
Yes. So
it was good to have her on.
Yes. It was a great show, Tina. I really appreciated it. And I love the way you carry yourself. I love your demeanor. I think you're a great leader in this business, and we wish you nothing but the best. And of course, so we're grateful that you were willing to come on the show, and always you can come on the show anytime you want, Tina. And of course, thank you to our listeners and our sponsors and all the people at DLC that made that event possible. What a great event.
Yeah, it was great to be there and see a lot of thought leaders in the industry today.
Yeah, a lot of people there.
Together.
Yeah, for sure.
Good discussions all around.
For sure. I was holding my steak high. And I ate a steak, too.
That's always good.
So it was a full-blown steak fest at the stakeholders meeting. Thank you, folks, for listening. Always fun to have you. And, of course, we love you. We're super grateful. GetAGripOnLighting.com. Check us out on social media. Bye for now.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost. Lord is there to find you.